Coming up on this week's episode of Search with Candor, I'm talking with Gus Paloja all about the Digital Markets Act and what it could mean for your search experience throughout 2024. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Search with Candor. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and joining me this week is Gus Paloja from Indeed. We're going to be talking all about the Digital Markets Act. If you haven't heard of the DMA before, don't worry, you're not the only person. This is something Gus and I were researching for this very episode specifically, and essentially what this new DMA could mean for big publishers and big companies going forward. Companies such as Google, Apple, Microsoft, all the biggest tech companies in the world will be held to this new standard by the European Commission. And basically, Gus and I want to understand what it could mean, what new changes are going to come to the SERPs, and which particular sectors and SERPs are going to be affected by those changes in the coming months as well. So all that coming up later on in the show. But first, here's a word from our sponsor, Optimizer. This week's sponsor is Optimizer, the PPC management software that is built for PPC people. Optimizer contains everything you need to create, optimize, and justify high-performing PPC campaigns. You'll never have to worry about security again. You'll never have to worry about setting up complex data sharing between apps or juggling multiple invoices. With their dashboard, you get a high-level overview of any ad account connected to Optimizer. You can quickly see key metrics, recommended actions, and how to set up the next campaign all in one place. The Rule Builder uses easy drag and drop conditions to automatically take action when you need them to. And this is a real experience from my previous role where we had an ad that ran throughout the holiday period when it shouldn't have been, and I think it spent nearly six times its recommended budget by accident. If I had an optimizer at that time, it would have paused the campaign automatically when it hit its budget, and we would have saved a lot of trouble and a lot of money for our client. You also get automated alerts for things such as KPI metrics and budgets in general. Optimizer monitors what you specify and delivers alerts to you so you can intervene as needed. Optimizer also integrates with other apps such as Slack, Teams, and Zapier. So if you need to get alerts where you need them, you can do that by integrating Optimizer with those tools as well. The Optimizer team includes world-renowned experts such as CEO Fred Vallès, product evangelist Nava Hopkins, and of course, the PPC puppy, HK. Now, we've spoken about this topic on the podcast before, so you probably already know that ad platforms are pretty much driven by profit motive and benefit when you spend more, even if it's not in your best interest to do so, and it's on lower value traffic. Advertisers need to put their interests and those of their brands and clients first. So the idea of PPC insurance is taking out a policy, essentially by using software like Optimizer, that covers you when things go south. With everything you need for audits and reporting, Optimizer is the all-in-one PPC toolkit that makes managing paid search easier, faster, and less prone to error. To start your two-week free trial, click the link in the show notes or the video description down below, or go to optimizer.com. That's a two-week free trial by clicking the link in our show notes or in the video description down below if you're watching on YouTube. As we probably already know, search intent is at the core of everything we do as SEOs. Even if you're not directly working in content, understanding what your users are trying to achieve through their searches is still pretty important. I think we can all agree. On top of this, Google has told us that it takes up to 9 searches for users to complete their goals. This can be a pretty hard picture to capture, to be honest, with traditional keyword research tools. So what if you could get hold of up-to-the-minute questions that users have asked that have been clustered by intent by Google themselves? Well, that's exactly what Also Asked actually does. Also Asked mines and organizes Google's People Also Asked data in real time, showing you the next most likely question your searchers are going to ask. Best of all, it's completely free. You don't even need to create an account to try out Also Asked. Of course, if you do find it useful, there are paid options as well. We have the free, we have the light, and we have the pro options in terms of accounts that you can subscribe to. At the touch of a button from these accounts, you can download not only the questions people are asking, but also the answers Google has selected, the website URLs, and the titles that are ranking for those answers as well. Also Asked has the world's only API for People Also Asked data, meaning you can combine this data you're pulling from whatever questions you're asking directly into tools. You can combine it with things like ChatGPT to really supercharge your content briefs and transform the way you write content at scale. Go to alsoasked.com and check out this fantastic intent research tool today. You may recognize this week's guest from their appearances on other podcasts such as Crawling Mondays, The SEO Sly, or even SEO in 2023 and SEO 2022. They've been a judge at the European Search Awards and have had many fantastic public speaking events across the UK, some of which I've attended in Brighton. He is the SEO product manager at Indeed. Welcome to the show, Gus Paloja.
Jack, thank you for having me, and let's have a nice chat.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I know you and I have met in Brighton a couple of times. I think we first met when we sat next to each other in a restaurant, and we kind of had that moment where we recognized each other. I was like, oh, you're Gus from Indeed. And you were like, you were the podcast guy, right? And I'm like, aha, aha.
Pretty much, yeah. I think it was Olga that brought us together with Miriam and a few other people to have lunch. And
Yeah.
It's always nice, right? It's like everyone in SEO, or a lot of people, will have like a little fame because, you know, maybe you liked what someone wrote one day, or you saw them speaking. Like, there are a few big stars that you may call it, but a lot of, like, it's very, everyone has a piece of the pie, right? So you get to know a lot of people that you read something, you respect them, and that respect goes both ways. So it's always nice feeling when you build that connection. It's like, oh, I know you. Like, you don't know that I know you, but I do know you.
I've done that for. I have a really good memory for names and faces, so I've kind of like freaked people out sometimes. I've been like, oh yeah, we met like 2 years ago, or whatever. And they're like, did we? Oh my god. Oh. But yeah, I think I'd seen your talk at the previous Brighton SEO, so I'd already like aware of you as a public speaker. Then saw you, as you said, appear on podcasts and stuff like that. So yeah, it was really cool to connect, and now we're finally sat down, and you brought a really, really interesting topic for us to discuss. I think it's something a couple of us in the industry are kind of aware of, but not especially talking about, and something that is going to affect a lot of things going forward. And I know a lot of people have been talking about all the changes that are happening to the SERP. Everybody's freaking out about SGE and all this kind of stuff, right? But we're going to be talking about the Digital Markets Act that is coming up in March. So by the time you're hearing this, it will be live in the UK. And I guess I want to start, Gus, with what was the kind of initial thought from your side of like why we should be talking about this on the podcast?
Yeah, so back in January, I was doing some research, just Googling things. And I saw this really odd filter called Place the Sites that it didn't really seem to make much sense. I think I was looking for restaurants, and you know, you'd have open now, you have different cuisines and that kind of filters. And suddenly there's this one, Place the Sites, that I couldn't really understand what it meant. So I clicked on it, and it removed all the SERP features. And that was the first thing that I noticed, and I posted about it, saying, hey, there's a version of Google that doesn't have, people also ask, doesn't have local map and so on. And talking with some people, I think Malte was one of the people that pointed this out. We can put in the show notes, and I won't mispronounce his last name, but he mentioned like, oh, this is the DMA. And shortly after, Google started posting about it, and then I started researching and understanding what were those filters and so on. So that's why we are talking about this here today.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to it, because I think that's something I'd seen a couple of people mentioning. I think I saw your original post about it, mentioning the suddenly the SERP features have disappeared kind of thing. And I think that's something a lot of us keep an eye out for. You know, us being an SEO, we're always aware of like, oh, this SERP feature has changed, or the classic, is this new, sending it to Barry Schwartz, right? Like, everybody will tweet at Barry and say, hey Barry, is this a new SERP feature? I really like what Brody Clark does as well. Shout out to Brody and his kind of tracker of all the SERP updates and stuff as well. Malte is another one who talks about this a lot, like these elements where as a normal user, you think like, oh, people probably won't even notice like this is happening. But us being switched on with our SEO brains, and we're very aware of like what the SERP usually looks like, you suddenly notice a change. And I think you're totally right. Places, sites is such a weird phrase to use. Like, it to my brain, like, is it supposed to have a slash in there? Is it supposed to have like places and sites? Like, what was the like phrase they're supposed to be using? And it seems like such a weird thing that would not be intuitive to somebody to click on for me, right?
Exactly, yeah. It took me a while to, after like reading a little bit more about it, I could understand what it means. But I know we're getting into the actual deep in the topic, but I don't think we explained what DMA is yet.
Yeah, yeah, please, please. Let's start things off. You're right. We were too keen to deep dive straight into it. So let's kind of summarize and think about what is the Digital Market Act and what it's going to mean for us going forward as SEOs.
Yeah, so I'm going to read this from Wikipedia and read from a few other places because it's a bit of a lingo and like official terminology, and I don't want to mess up too much. So I'm stealing this from Wikipedia right now. That the Digital Markets Act is a regulation in EU that aims to make the digital economy fairer and more contestable. Essentially, what it's doing is it's creating some rules for companies that they call gatekeepers. Google is one of them. And a gatekeeper will be a company that has a strong economic position, that has a strong intermediation position. So someone like Google, that it's used to reach companies, to reach websites. Google is on the way, facilitates for you to find information on the web. You can argue that in a lot of cases, they are the final destination with the zero-click searches and that kind of stuff. But yep. Essentially, you know, you use Google to reach other places. And the idea is that these companies shouldn't have such advantage to essentially promote themselves, like put themselves in front of everybody else. So that's what the place sites come from. The idea is it removes a lot of the SERP features. So let's say you can still find a restaurant, but you're not necessarily going through Google Maps because if they put the map on top, you're not going to go to Yelp, you're not going to go to, Yellow Pages or TripAdvisor or Deliveroo and so on. Like Google is, shaping the answer in a lot of different ways. The same thing happens, let's say, with flights, right? Google still buy the flight and you buy it through someone else, but Google will show the flight search directly on the SERP results. So it kind of, the idea is to make it more fair for other companies to have a chance to compete instead of Google just being the filter of everything and kind of owning that space. So that's kind of like what's going on. Other companies have different rules. Microsoft is in here as well, Apple, and there are more companies that are also considered gatekeepers. So they have to abide through all of these rules, but all the research that I've done so far is on Google.
That makes sense, right? We're SEOs, so we're going to talk about Google. But yeah, I think it's interesting the element there. You mentioned zero-click searches, and I think that's something every SEO always worries about. Like, oh, actually, the fact that Google is presenting your information, and I teased SG at the top of the episode, right? Because this is another element to this zero-click element where people are worried that Google is just going to serve your content directly on the SERP, and there's no need for anyone to ever click on your website. So you lose all the, you get loads of impressions, but you don't get any clicks. So you don't get any traffic to your site. You don't get advertising, all this kind of stuff. And I think it's really interesting that kind of we're getting this balance now of trying to level the playing field, right? Of Google manipulating the SERPs and like you said, reducing the fact that they favor their own kind of like subgroups, like Google Flights, like Google Maps, their own products that are there, you're able to filter that out and kind of level the playing field so you can see the other options that are available. It's a really interesting conversation because I think a lot of people just take that stuff for granted and don't even think about it. Like 99.9% of users will just use Google Maps to find a restaurant without even thinking about it. And they wouldn't even consider, oh, actually that's Google doing it themselves and you're therefore going through their filter. So there is an inherent bias there already, right? You can't avoid that.
Yeah, pretty much.
But most people wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah, and at some point it gets so easy that you're so familiar with it that you kind of, people will find a hassle to actually go somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. I found myself kind of purposefully going out of the way to click different things and try different things. And again, this is me being a very SEO kind of person and being aware of the SERPs and stuff. But there was a conversation, I know Mark and I have had conversations with our wives before, where they click on Google Ads because it's the easiest way to find the product, right? Because as we know, the SERPs get pretty volatile sometimes. At the moment, we're in this weird, everything is Reddit and Quora still at the moment in product searches. So if you want a legit product that is just from the manufacturer or from the retailer site or whatever, usually the best result is actually a Google ad that is above the initial organic results. And turning SERP features off, I think, would annoy a lot of people in weird ways and make it less convenient in many ways.
Yeah, but I think at the same time, like, you need to compensate everybody, right? You can't just have one place where you go for everything. It's like if all the online shopping was on Amazon. Like, it's very convenient and it's quick and has good prices, but I still try to look into different places. I have this weird logic that if a product is up to 10% more expensive somewhere else, I still go somewhere else. If I'm buying little things, right? If I'm buying a TV or a phone that is a lot of money, then I will still go for the cheapest one. But if I see things like, oh, can I just go to the shop and pick it up now, and it costs £5 more, I'll just go to the shop.
I agree. I'm trying to do that a bit more and be a bit more conscious about my purchasing in 2024. I know my wife buys a lot of books, and I've been trying to get myself back into reading recently, and trying to avoid buying stuff on Amazon has been like a conscious decision from us. Amazon is also another gatekeeper that is mentioned in the DMA as well. So obviously these are like these household names of the people behind Bing and Microsoft and all this kind of stuff, and then obviously ByteDance, who are behind TikTok as well. Like, these are huge platforms, and I know a lot of people have been talking about how much TikTok shopping has been taking over TikTok, and again, that is all internal, filtered and controlled by them kind of stuff. And I think it's a positive direction, I think, overall, that means we get to see a bit more diversity in the SERPs in a positive way. We get to see, like you're saying, you giving other people the opportunity, right? You're giving the other companies the opportunity to shop more ethically or shop in different places or just see what different options. Some options just might not be on the Google services and you would never get them. But then if you go and find it in a different place, then some other flight provider or whatever it is, then you can get it in a different way. And I think that's a really kind of positive overall step to stop these, handful of enormous trillion-dollar tech companies basically taking over the world.
Yeah. I think overall it is a positive change. I am searching through the results. And so if we go back to how we started all of this, right? I was looking for a restaurant here in near Dublin where I live. And I clicked on this filter and I noticed that all the feature snippets were out. But I also know the area, so I know the restaurants that are nearby. And the actual website from the restaurants also disappeared. So the results were TripAdvisor, was anything that they call an aggregator. So TripAdvisor was there.
Right.
Deliveroo had a page and a few other food delivery places. And they took a very broad definition of what they call an aggregator right now. So even my local council has a page with the restaurants in the main street, and they appeared, which is interesting because it wasn't smart enough to make that definition based on a page, right? I don't think it's showing every page of the council would be on that filter because it's such a small website and there's not really a clear pattern to say, every council in Ireland has a section about the food and dine or something like that. It's not that obvious to filter that way. But I found a specific page. And I also found some blog posts that were like, 10 best Italian restaurants in Dublin. And it would have a restaurant in my area. So that was an interesting result. But the actual restaurants that are the final place where you go to actually eat, they disappeared from this list as well. And I think that's not positive. That is a very odd experience. So I think there's still some job, some work to be done there. But anyway, it's been interesting, but it's still far from perfect, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I think just from hearing your experience, it sounds like it needs a lot of tweaking and fine tuning, right? It needs a lot of adjustments to really get it right. And I think we're seeing a lot of this for what Google is trying to introduce with a lot of stuff over the last couple of years. There's a lot of experiments, a lot of testing, all this kind of stuff. As always, that's nothing new. But the way, you know, we've seen the kind of beta rollout of SGE in the US, and it's still not coming to us here in the EU and in the UK because of various data protection and all that kind of stuff. I think it's interesting where there is definitely positives and negatives to it, right? There is definitely something that I think will affect us positively and negatively when it comes to users. And I think it will be an interesting kind of testing bed for us as SEOs to see, like, oh, like, how do you report this to a client? Or how do you discuss this with your management if you're working in house, right? Like, oh, we rank number three if you click the filter that says places and sites.
Yeah.
If you don't click places, sites, then we're not anywhere because there's a huge SERP feature and the map pack completely dominates page one. And the whole discussion, I know, again, I'm going to relate it a lot to SGE because that's the hot topic right now, but the discussion of that real estate on the SERP and how much actual space all this SERP feature stuff takes up. I mentioned Google Ads earlier. You talk about, like, all the different carousels you get, the map features, the local packs, all this kind of stuff that takes up so much real estate. So by the time you get to the actual organic results, you have to scroll to get to the organic results, right? And that only gets worse with SGE. So I think it's an interesting way to kind of filter it down. From your perspective, did you see that it was quite different to, if you leave it without the filter on and kind of the standard SERP, was that page one similar to what you saw when you hit the filter? Was that kind of like similar results? Or were those the blog posts? I'm kind of relating it to SGE, right? Where they would pull out stuff from page four and five to then highlight on the first page.
So the only thing they would remove were the actual, let's say for something like a restaurant or a local business, they removed the actual local business together with the SERP features. And you end up with a lot of aggregators. And that was a bit confusing. Like, there are some names that you can recognize and you say, okay, there is a good chance that something good is in here, right? If I'm looking for a restaurant and you're giving me TripAdvisor, like, okay, I would assume that TripAdvisor does have a good list of local restaurants that I can check. It might not be the same as Google and might not be the restaurants that you want, but it's, you know, it's prepared in a way that you can digest. But I also saw a lot of old school directories, those that people were building links in the past that are listing there. They have restaurants with zero reviews. So they have a lot of outdated information in there as well. So that was a bit odd. But the results, they essentially keep the same order and remove the local businesses on this case. So if you are, you have, you know, an equivalent of Yellow Pages on position 11, there are three restaurants that were removed and now it's a position 8. So there is a logic around it that you can say, oh, if the filter is in, you can estimate how many positions you would go up.
I think that's really interesting because, again, that does, I mentioned, like, the reporting, I'm thinking from my agency brain here of, like, how you report that. Like, oh, if you tick this box, then we go up three positions or whatever it is. That's an interesting way of thinking about the SERP and how much it shifts. And I think, like you said, going from position 11 to position 8, I know we're kind of moving over to infinite scrolling and stuff at the moment, but, like, moving from the bottom of the top of page two to, like, mid page one, like, going from that 11 to 8 example you just said there could be a big difference in terms of the visibility of that site and the organic results you're seeing there. And I know we're not just talking about local stuff, right? We're kind of focused on the local stuff because that was the initial search. There are a few other verticals this is affecting as well, right?
Yeah, so this is also affecting travel. And it's affecting jobs. And I think there's another one that I can remember from the top of my head. So let's go into my notes and I'll tell you in 1 second. I think this might be the ones. When you go local, like, it might include a lot of things. I saw changes when I was looking for a GP or looking for a restaurant. And it's kind of all over the place. So I think even looking for software, it gives me the place, the sites filter. and we're calling it filter, but Google actually created a name for this, which is called cheap refinement. Yes. Which it seems very glamorous for just another filter that is already there, right? So if you're looking for a restaurant again, it always shows you all that list of different filters. And it's just another one on the list. It's not something prominent that you say, oh, I'm going to do, I want to check the place of sites, or I want to check the clean version of this. It's not, I would say most people won't really notice straight away. But it's there. So it's there for the travel industry in general. So both for flights and hotels, for local, and for jobs as well, even though I could not trigger anything for jobs in Ireland yet. Sadly, it's the one that I'm the most interested on. It's been the hardest one.
Working it indeed, that makes sense, right?
To see the differences there.
Yeah, I think that I can kind of see the logic across those various different verticals, right? They have a similar kind of experience when you're thinking about it from a SERP perspective. Like the flight one, I think, is really obvious. We all know Google Flights at this point and how much that has been a focus for Google and how much that has been a key part of the SERP. Was it a similar kind of experience where you go through and hit that refinement chip, as we now officially call it? Thank you for correcting me, guys. I appreciate that. kept using the word filter. And I know you mentioned that in your blog post as well. Like, everyone calls it a filter. Technically, it's a refinement chip. We want to be correct here. Was that a similar kind of experience for the flight SERPs compared to the local kind of stuff? What were the differences there?
So for flights, and mostly for flights, the difference is much different than what we saw in local. So first, the box, the Google Flights box is gone, and they added a few new filters. So they are linking, so let's say if you search flying from Dublin to Austin, and you can even put the dates, it will actually give you a list of airlines, and you can go and book straight from the airline. And then that's a new third feature. And then below that, once you start seeing the OTAs, Booking and Expedia, those kind of websites, it will show you another little box that says from and put the price. So you actually have price. That one is quite visible. It's not like a little structured data tiny thing. It's in there. It's like a whole space that is just for that, has a different color. So it does give more attention to. Like, it will bring your eye to those. And they also added a filter called flight sites that removes everything from the SERPs and just leaves the prices, the actual airline and the prices. It's also a refinement chip, so I don't think a whole lot of people will use. But I think flights do have a much different experience than the local business now. I think they have a higher chance of both the airlines and the aggregators or the OTAs will benefit more than the local business from this.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because you're kind of like really, really cutting it down. Like the perfect example you just said there, that SERP feature of the price and the dates below the actual link itself. That is something I know a lot of people pay attention to. Like, I'm talking as a user here rather than just as an SEO. Like, that is totally something, as you're just browsing, skimming that, and just scrolling down that first page, you're just like, oh, that one says 250, that one says 350, that one says 300. Well, why is that one cheaper? Like, you can just at a glance pick that out and stuff, right? It's almost like it's making the user do a little bit more research and pay a little bit more attention to it, and kind of the information isn't presented so instantly and directly to you. Would you think that's fair?
I think it's still giving you a lot of information. I think the main difference for me here is that it's giving it not to Google. Like, Google is not the gatekeeper here anymore. You can still see the prices, but you will go or directly to the airline or to the aggregator where you actually buy the ticket from. So it's giving more opportunity to the people that are actually doing the business, right? It's not just packaging on a different way. And I think for flights, when I was writing about this a couple of weeks ago, I was about to go on a rant about like how much more expensive Google Flights makes those, because they take a piece of the pie and then it goes to the OTA, and then it goes to the airline. So there are a lot of companies in the way getting a percentage of that. But actually, it's been a few years that Google does not charge affiliate a commission from the airlines or from the OTAs. I found information about that in US, so I just removed that from my post because I have no other information that they still make money out of this. I mean, they still own the experience, right? And this is still something, it's still a power that you have. But with the DMA now, they will own this experience a little less. What is still interesting about this, so I'm going to do a tiny detour and go back to the flights, because the refinement chip plasticites that exist as a filter on the top also exists as a third feature. They're two different things. They have the same name. And this one, let's say you're going to see some organic results, and then you have the plasticites on the third. And that one is a horizontal box that you can go to 10 different results. So you have the normal results, 1, 2, 3, 4, one below the other. And you can also scroll on the vertical and go through a lot of these. And while Google doesn't have their box anymore, they made all of their flight pages crawlable. So you have a page like Google/flights/ London Gatwick to Austin, something like that. So they became themselves a competitor, a normal competitor in this group. And they also added all the FAQs that everybody abused from. They added to those pages as well, which I find a bit ironic, because they're not always providing great information, right? It's like, how can you find the cheapest flights to Austin? Like, oh, Google Flights will give you blah, blah, blah. And sure, everybody was doing this to get a bit more of SERP space. We can argue if that was actually bringing more clicks or more sales. But I found interesting that I don't know if they were already in this game before, but they now they became just another travel agency in the group.
I wonder how many people have ever described Google as just another travel agency.
In this case.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm not saying you're wrong, not at all. I think that's a brilliant way of thinking about it, because we mentioned it at the top of the show. This is like leveling the playing field, right? This is opening up the opportunity to everyone. So random travel agency you've never heard of has the opportunity now to compete with Google in the same way, right? This is the whole point of it. And I guess, do you think this is a thing that we will see, you know, we've talked about the local stuff. There's also hotels and stuff as well, right? There's an element there for the hotel side of things. Again, I can kind of see that in a similar kind of, it makes sense when you're thinking about flights and local stuff and hotels and jobs. They all kind of come under a similar kind of broader umbrella to me. That kind of makes sense. Do we see similar kind of stuff in the hotel side of things as well?
I think in the hotels, my criticism is similar to the local stuff, because if you search for, let's say, if you go to hotels in London, you will only find the OTAs there, right? You're not going to find the little hotel in Camden Street or something like that. But if you normally would go to a smaller place, so let's say if you're looking for, I don't know, hotels in Wexford, this is a small city in Ireland, you're going to find some of the big players, but you're going to find some of the local hotels as well, directly their website in there. So it's the same thing here. If you choose the filter, the local hotel disappears from the list and only the OTAs are in there, which is still taking Google out of the picture because the local pack is not there anymore. So you still give a chance to Booking, Expedia, and so on to have an opportunity. They did add an interesting visual feature in there. It's also a horizontal carousel, so you can go without going to the actual website. So let's say without going to Booking or TripAdvisor, you can scroll through. There are like four hotels are visible, and you can go within Booking you do a search directly on the SERP, seeing all of the hotels that are listed on that page inside on booking.com, if that makes sense. And that one will have a name of the hotel, a picture, and the score they have in terms of reviews as well. So I think the hotels should be part of this. You know, the local business deserve to have a space as well. And so I'm hoping they still going to make it a little bit better, but it is taking Google away from it. Google is not owning so much of that anymore.
Yeah, I know there's from the official announcement from Google, and by the way, listeners and viewers, I will link to Gus's article and the official documentation from Google in the show notes, so you can do your own research and get fully up to date even after the podcast. And from the official documentation from Google, they mention product sites as well, like there's jobs, which again, like you said, something is a bit more difficult to trigger, but product sites seems to be a thing as well. And you can also trigger it by clicking the see more like button halfway through the SERP, if that makes sense. So you don't necessarily have to hit that refinement chip. There are a couple of different ways to activate it through the SERP, which I thought was very, very interesting. And I wonder how like that much interactivity is going to change how people move about the SERPs, right? How, I don't know how many people, this is something I talked about when I had Garrett Sussman on the show, and we were talking about perspectives and how, oh my God, it's going to transform the SERPs and stuff. It's like, but it's only going to change it for people who actually use that chip at the top of the SERP, right? If you, only if you actually go out of your way to click that button just below the search bar and actually use it, how many people will actually go through that effort of doing it? And I think it's an interesting thing because of obviously all of the antitrust trial stuff that's been happening with Google recently. There is a bigger, wider conversation of the monopolization of these tech companies. And I think this is Google kind of stepping in that direction of, hey, look, we're not so bad after all. We give everyone an equal opportunity, right? Like this is them trying to be a bit more friendly about it. But it does, for me, and again, I have not done anywhere near as much research as you have, Gus, so please correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like a very small step in that direction rather than kind of a big definitive, you know, change, fundamental change to the SERPs in that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like this is a small change, and I think like this law will become active, if that's probably not the right words, but like in March, companies will need to show that they're compliant to it. So Google started making changes before that. And it's still a bit confusing, right? Like, would I always use this filter? Not really. Like, if I'm looking for restaurants, I want to find the restaurant. I don't want to go necessarily. If I'm looking for someone maybe near my house that I kind of know a little bit, I don't want to go from Google to an aggregator and then to find that actual restaurant. So sometimes It's just adding layers to it. And it's a lot of things that, you know, Google and companies should be testing. And I'm hoping that they're still testing this and trying to fine tune a lot of stuff, because sometimes I get to the actual SERP feature with the all the aggregators, and it will show me, let's say I was looking for mechanics the other day, and show me two or three aggregators that are mechanics in my city. So that's great. But as you keep going, they will always show 10. So I found results for places in New Zealand and UK and Australia. And I understand the logic behind it, perhaps, that is like, okay, we probably have a score to say these are the most relevant documents, and we have to serve 10. So eventually things that are not relevant will be served. It's the same, like if you go to page 5, 6, or 10 of SERPs, you can understand there's, you know, a mention to this here. It's a little bit related. It's not really relevant, and that's why it's so far away. But I think they will adjust, you know, some of the things. I see some filters all over the place. I've seen places sites and job sites together, or flight sites and places sites together, when it's right. You know, you're clearly looking for a flight, so you should only have one filter or another. And I can't trigger any of the job ones from Ireland, and they didn't say that. They said products are limited to a few EU countries right now, but they didn't say anything about jobs. So when I actually use the a job sites filter, it just shows me that there are no relevant results and gives me an empty SERP. So I think they're still, it's a small step.
Yeah, definitely. You shared the example there. It was literally marketing jobs and then click the jobs refinement chip. Like, they should, there are always marketing jobs everywhere. Yeah. Even if you're in the middle of nowhere, there is always marketing jobs available. You wouldn't think that would be able to, like you said, it gives the no jobs matching your search result things. Like, that is crazy to me. And I think, like you said, when you get to a place where Google are testing a couple of different things and you're getting two different chips that two different things and you're trying to click one but search for one, or like you said, if you're searching for a flight but it brings up the places sites ones, like, oh, maybe that's relevant to me, you can get a very confusing user experience pretty quickly, I would think. Like, I always bring up and mention my wife being a person who does, she's a nurse, she does not work in SEO at all, so I love having conversations about her SERP experience from a person who is, she had never heard of the Digital Market Acts. No, most people in the world have not heard of the Digital Markets Act. Most people aren't aware that SGE is a thing or whatever, like all the featured snippets. They wouldn't know the name of featured snippet necessarily. And I think it's interesting that, you know, just from a little bit of testing that you've done, obviously being the jobs one being particularly your interest while you're working at Indeed, that makes a lot of sense. You can break it so easily with a couple of clicks for a really generic search term that should give you tens of millions of results. It's easy to break that SERP. I'm kind of a bit worrying, but I understand, obviously, we're in the fairly early testing stages. But as you said, by the time this episode comes out, this will have already been brought into legality here in the UK. So
yeah, I don't know if it's, you know, everyone is saying that Google's getting worse and that kind of stuff. I always try to like put myself in someone else's shoes, right? Now that I work in products and I understand how a few things are built, that it's not just, you know, when you ask a designer, like, oh, can you just make this green? It seems like it's very simple, right? To just click in here and then it's, you know, it turned green. But it doesn't really work like that. It has layers and, you know, there are different things that make it something work that way. And it's the same when you're creating logic for a feature, right? So it has different ways to trigger different things, and it's probably like, it's not just like, oh, show me these websites. When you have to do it scale, you have to find, okay, first we need to classify these websites into this, and it needs 5 criteria for this to belong to this. What if it belongs to another group, you know, and then gets all this confusion. But I do, as you said, I am finding easier to break things, or I spot problems easier than I would spot before. And it could be that it's getting worse, that I hear from a lot of people. It could also be us getting more advanced in what we do and easily finding if something is good or not good. Like, think of how long it would take one of us to do, I don't know, keyword research or an activity 4 years ago, and how quick it is now, right? You're like, there are new tools, there are new ways, there are things that you realize, okay, I don't need to do this step, or this is not relevant. So I try to balance both sides. But if I look at how easy it is to find bad results or things that are broken on Google, I find it much easier than it was a few years ago.
Yeah, in general, I agree with you. I think there is that, like you said, that wider discussion of, and Mark and I talked about this at the end of last month, like, the is Google getting worse? That study that was done in Germany and with a few different universities and looking at various different factors in there. And I guess as a kind of broader question, do you think these changes do actually make Google more open and fair? Because I know there was a story from Wired and Yelp, we've mentioned Yelp a couple of times on the episode already, like, complaining that this is kind of unfair and actually it's not doing what it claims to do and Google isn't being as open and honest. What's your thought so far from your experience, Gus?
Yeah, I think online travel agencies, or OTAs for short, they are benefiting from this. I see that as a positive result for them. I don't see so positive for local businesses. I think there's still a good bit of changes in there. I can't say for job sites because I haven't really seen in action and how much it actually changes. So I think it's going in the right direction. And it's not really valid yet, right? It's going to be from March that companies will be obliged to follow this. So I think there will be more change. Like the EU government will look at this and say, hey, you need to change this, or this is not compliant, and so on. So I think a lot of things will change. I read that story from Wired on and Yelp as well, and it had a few suggestions that I didn't really thought of before. Like they could still show the local pack, but the reviews shouldn't just come from Google. You know, you could have reviews from a lot of different places. That would give me a more interesting view. Like I don't know, it would make me more informed about something. Maybe I trust Yelp, and seeing Yelp prices, or sorry, not prices, reviews straight there, maybe they will say, like you do with flights, you show like four different sources. You could show a few different sources for reviews or for prices or for things like that. And that I would find a little bit more interesting. But I think there's still a long, long time to go. There's still a lot of weird results and websites that I would think, you know, someone already abandoned this website a long time ago. I don't know why they're still active. I won't name names, but it looks like aggregators from 20 years ago that I get to a result and say, there are no reviews on any of those. And I started doing some researches on things that I know of, like I'm looking for a mechanic near my house, or I'm looking for a place to change windows, because I've done that research and changed windows not long ago. And I've looked into a lot of the local businesses. I called them, I checked the websites and so on. So I'm just trying to validate through these a research that I did as a consumer. And I wouldn't find the places that I know that are actually good on some of this filter. So I think there's still a long way to go. But it's a positive change, I would say.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you. I think it's, like we kind of said, I think the DMA and these similar kind of things, again, opening up the can of worms, is the antitrust trial that Google's been going through recently. Like, diversifying and not making sure that not half a dozen companies don't basically control the entire internet is a positive thing for humanity and users, right? And all that kind of stuff, right? Like you would hope that they don't just get to control everything and entirely dictate our lives and all this kind of stuff. And I do see an interesting argument from people like Yelp and from the study that they did looking into how much it actually changed the click-through rate to Google services and all this kind of stuff, and how it's kind of doesn't feel enough in a way. Like, it feels like you're totally right. I think it's a step in the right direction, but the big question is, how much further is Google going to have to go to comply with the seemingly like ever escalating stuff that the European Commission is saying, right? Oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. Actually, you're monopolizing this. Actually, you need to change this. Like, I think that's going to get bigger and bigger, and the European Commission is going to crack down on them more and more, essentially. And I wonder how that's going to be like the future of these, you know, half dozen gatekeeping companies in the future.
Yeah, and we are talking about search here, but it's part of the gatekeepers. It's not just the main company, but the products as well. And Google Maps, Google Play, Google Shopping, Google Ads, and Search and Chrome are all part of this. So I think there will be a lot of other changes that are not necessarily directly search, or not, at least not on the core of what we do, but they might have a, you know, knock-on effect on those things as well. If they have to make changes on maps, maybe people will start discovering different websites. Or if they can't enforce, if they have to ask people if they want to use Google or Bing or another search engine, you know, a little percentage might go somewhere else. So, you know, it's always the little steps, but I'm hoping that could be more, a little bit more diverse. I remember I worked for a hotel chain, was my client back in my agency years. And I always found it very hard to do SEO for them, because most of the results would be travel agencies or Google. And even on inside the map, let's say if you search for hotels in Brighton, you would click through, find a hotel. It would give me a list of OTAs and, you know, the the business itself would just get a percentage of that. I could optimize local pack and still give a lot of money to other players. So, you know, I'm hoping there'll be more opportunity for the actual businesses that are the final destination, let's call it like that, the restaurants, the doctors, the mechanics, the hotels, so people can still find them. I love aggregators. I use them. It's very handy. Compare prices. They have better deals sometimes, but it's still, you know, important to give a chance to everyone to compete on this.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So let's wrap up with a couple of predictions, shall we? Let's look forward. We've kind of been dancing around the topic of looking forward to the future. I guess we've said travel, local, shopping, jobs, products. Are there any other verticals do you think that would make sense for this to affect in the future in terms of Google search? Let's keep it to Google search and not go out too broadly, but is there any other verticals you think make sense for this to affect? And do you think there might be added to this? Because I think, like I said, there's not an initial kind of like, oh yeah, they're all in the same category. But as soon as you see that list of travel, local, shopping, jobs, like they all kind of make sense in a way, if that makes sense, because of Google having that big primary kind of SERP feature, right? Everybody knows Google Maps. A lot of people use Google Flights, Google Jobs, Google Shopping, all this kind of stuff. There's that element there already. Do you think there's anything else that might be a potential addition to this list of particular SERPs and verticals?
That is a very good point. I don't have an answer straight out of the bat. I think maybe video might be affected as well, because, you know, most of what you see, maybe you see some TikTok now, but it's TikTok and YouTube, right? And I think that could be a difference. Maybe podcasts will show up on this list as well. Although, no, actually, I don't think there's a point there because you don't have so many, like a player that controls anything there.
Because Google had the podcast carousel that they've gotten rid of. That was a whole feature that was discontinued last year, and I think they're now rolling everything into YouTube Music, so it's even more integrated into YouTube, hence why we're now on YouTube. Hello, YouTube viewers. And yeah, I think it's all right. I think video is a really interesting part of it, where there's always discussion, and whenever we like talk to the guys over at Systrix about the trends that are happening and all this kind of stuff, I know they keep a close eye on the biggest winners and biggest losers in terms of visibility each quarter and things like that. YouTube is often up there as like, oh, it's grown a bunch of visibility. We're like, well, yeah, it's owned by Google. Of course it's getting highlighted in the SERPs. And I think you're totally right. Again, conversation I had 18 months ago now about TikTok and how much short form content is now featured in video SERPs, like especially how to stuff. If you're, I use the example of DIY because I bought a house last year and have been doing a lot of DIY stuff. All of it is YouTube stuff. All of it is TikTok stuff. You either get YouTube Shorts, you either get TikTok stuff, or you get the YouTube where it filters out like, oh, I think you want the clip from 1 minute 32 to 2 minutes 25 for how to build the shelf. Like, it will even cut down so you don't even see the first minute and a half of this video. It cuts straight to the bit where it thinks you need it, right? And I think you're totally right thinking of things like Vimeo or Daily Motion or all these, like, again, I'm thinking like 10 years ago of like the video platforms that were emerging, thinking like, oh, this is going to be the next YouTube or whatever. It's an interesting one where I think YouTube has a pretty big monopoly stranglehold on the SERPs, and TikTok has kind of been creeping up in there. But as we mentioned, ByteDance, in a very different way, are still part of the gatekeeping list in terms of the DMA as well. So I'd be interested to see if something else could ever compete with YouTube in the same way. Like, I know in terms of live stuff, like Twitch is obviously the biggest example. I watch a lot of Twitch stuff in my spare time and watch a lot of video games and all that kind of stuff, lots of live streamers. But you rarely get Twitch results on a SERP because it is live and they really don't focus on the video on demand side of things, right? YouTube is all about the video on demand side of things. So is TikTok. So yeah, a shift in video SERPs I think would be really, really interesting. And yeah, we've seen the little push towards that because of the rise of TikTok over the last couple of years. I'd be interested to see if other platforms, because I feel like we haven't seen a meteoric rise like TikTok in a very long time. It's just like completely blown up and is now as used as YouTube in terms of video searches and stuff. I'd be very interested to see if other platforms could either grow or appear out of nowhere, or other social media platforms could grow out of that and, yeah, diversify the video steps. That's a really, you opened a whole like side of my brain there, Gasling.
Yeah, maybe they could include at some point all the, what was the name they were giving to the perspectives? Like, that could be a good angle for some of these as well. Like, I was looking for like a furniture shop, which might sit into local to some extent, but I'm looking to like, this is a, you know, huge chains that have 50 shops around Ireland and shops in the UK as well. So it is, when you talk local, we are often thinking about small business, but you know, B&Q would show up on this local, or Harvey Norman were being affected by some of those as well. And so I think, I'm hoping there'll be more opportunities for all sorts of companies to get in there. I know the UK, on the prediction side, UK and US are also talking some level or another about similar laws like this one. So I'm hoping this one might be the starting point, and they'll start making changes, and other countries will take this on and learn from it and say, okay, this is not enough of a change. We need to change more, and so on. And it will force Google to become a bit more diverse.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting topic for Google to tackle, because they are so international. The internet is so international, and having to deal with, exactly as you were saying there, Gus, like the regulations from the US are different to the European Commission, that are different to the UK, that are different to the Middle East, that are different to different countries in Asia. Like, it can change so much from country to country and continent to continent, that having to have like, oh, these filters are only available in this thing, but when we show you this product in the US, it has to be done in this way, and all this different stuff. I would find that exhausting from Google's side of things, trying to worry about how to handle all the different legal things.
Yeah, yeah, that is a whole lot of work.
But it's important work that they need to do, I think. Like you said, I think this is a positive step in the right direction for holding these gatekeepers kind of accountable, right? And I think, I guess, to kind of wrap us off and kind of open the can of the broader conversation, do you think this and things like the antitrust trial I mentioned a couple of times throughout the episode, do you think this is a step in the direction of more governing bodies holding these gatekeepers kind of accountable for the grip that they have on so many of these industries?
Yeah, I think so. I think like those are happening in different places, but we are learning so much from it, right? Like, we have all the Twitter drama in STO, finally a drama that is big enough for all of us to actually learn from it and not just, you know, eavesdrop on some random gossip that will take will last 1 or 2 days. Like, here's something that is actually useful, and we still have to think about it and, you know, understand how we felt betrayed about the lies and user interaction doesn't matter and all that kind of stuff. I think these are changes on a positive direction. And, you know, there are always a lot of things changing in SEO. AI is here and it's very scary, and more changes will happen. So this might be happening on a good time before things go completely out of control.
Well, I think that wraps us up very nicely. Hopefully we don't completely out of control and taken over by multinational corporations and AI and stuff. But if people do want to follow you, want to keep up to date with what you're posting on social media and stuff, Gus, where can people find you across the internet?
Yeah, before I say all of that, I need to give a little shout out that is almost, it's a little bit embarrassing for me, but I will say it anyway. I was calling the Digital Markets Act, Digital Marketing Act, and it took someone that I don't know that reached out to me, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, but it's Yiri or Jiri Lachina. He's an SEO from Czech Republic, dropped me a message a few days ago after he saw my blog post and corrected me, and I think it's a nice shout out for someone who actually read and paid attention and took the time to be nice enough to me, so I don't get embarrassed for way longer, even though people will listen to this at some point and it's recorded forever. And but I, you know, we do things wrong sometimes. I like to give credit when people are nice to me, so that there it is. You can find me on my website, that is gustpelogia.com. You can find me in Brighton in April. And I'll be there in person speaking about how to write the perfect ticket for your devs. You will find me on Twitter, X, trying not to be too active there, and trying Threads as well a little bit. But you mostly will find me, my SEO persona, you're going to find it on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you, Jiri, for that little shout out. I was calling it digital marketing as well. I will totally hold my hands up. That like feels more natural to say, right? The Digital Markets Act feels very strange, feels unnatural. But yeah, huge shout out. And like I said, links for everything if you want to go and follow Gus, listeners and viewers, will be in the show notes. So click them down below in the link description and go and follow Gus, because you're awesome, Gus. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And I'll see you back in Brighton in a few months.
Look forward to it, man. Thanks. And that just about wraps us up for this week. Thank you so much for listening or watching, wherever you are listening or watching. Thank you so much to Gus for joining me on the show and talking to me and explaining all of the features of the DMA we should be worrying about coming up in the next few months. Thanks very much to this week's sponsors, both Also Asked and Optimizer. Thank you so much for your support. And of course, thank you to you for sharing, subscribing, liking, and all that good stuff that you need to do to spread the good word of Search with Candor throughout the podcast sphere. I've got some amazing guests coming up in the next few weeks. And of course, we'll have the monthly recap with Mark and I back here in the Candor studio in a few weeks' time as well. So stay tuned for those coming up over the next few weeks. In the meantime, I hope you have a lovely week, and thank you so much for listening and watching.